You're listening to another episode of Open Source CXO, the podcast designed to share insights on how to excel in your business using technology, regardless of the industry. Host Robert Kehoe is a self-taught software developer who has grown to the role of CEO. Renowned for his collaborations with organizations such as Stanford University, Nelnet, and Louis Vuitton, he continually seeks new challenges to conquer in the world of tech. Accompanying him is Don Blackburn, a veteran COO with over 25 years of experience in cultivating diverse relationships and driving innovation in various technical projects. Each week, they'll be sitting down with some of the nation's foremost technology leaders to develop an open source playbook, drawing from their firsthand experiences in the field. Let's talk some tech.
Today, we're joined by Jim Poteet, who is in senior leadership over at Oracle Health, formerly Cerner. Mm-hmm. It's my understanding you've been at Cerner for a number of years. First, thank you for joining us. And second, why don't we talk a little bit about your role there?
Yeah, absolutely. What you do. Happy to be here. I've been with Cerner, now Oracle Health, for about 13 years. Two stints. Started in early 2000s and then rejoined 2013 after some entrepreneurial stuff here in the city. Currently, you know, have a division of about 120 some odd software engineers across four different development centers, two in the U.S. and two in India, you know, working in really the financial side of healthcare from the standpoint. So leading the data analytics from the financial side, as well as health information management, which is a solution on, you know, making sure all the medical coding is correct so that our clients can get paid for their services, which seems to be a pretty important
task. They like that.
Yeah, they like that from that standpoint. But beyond that, you know, Oklahoma State guy, industrial engineering degree. Cut my teeth at Accenture, worked in every industry except for healthcare and finance. And then after that, worked in healthcare and finance.
Now you got it all covered.
And so I've covered a lot over the years from that standpoint.
I think it's interesting that you took the family business and then carried that over into your professional life.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And the lessons you learned.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you look at it, the funeral business is part ministry.
Sure. Yeah.
As well as, you know, it was a service to the community, right? So there was a lot of, you know, it was in the family for 100 years. Early on, it was the ambulance business was part of it, you know, till that went to the city, all those sort of things. There are, you know, definite similarities to what I learned and, you know, what I learned from my parents and how my dad orchestrated the, you know, the business over time to things that I do today, you know, with, you know, the software engineering team.
Well, relating to people.
Yeah, it's related to people, but, you know, experimentation was one of the things.
Oh, okay.
So
how'd you get your start then? Did you develop software for your family's business? Is that?
Well, I was, I did back in, and this is, you know.
That's kind of how I got my start. It's from my dad's company.
Like the, you know, I wasn't an Atari guy. I was an Apple IIe guy.
Oh.
You know, kind of the Apple stuff.
Yeah.
And I had an applied engineering card, which would mimic a PC, so I could do Apple stuff, and I could do, you know, the PC stuff was coming along. So there was kind of some accounting things that I did to help there. I just always had an affinity. Went into industrial engineering, and we had a background of programming in that. And I had an internship with, I worked for a professor where our senior project was with the Oklahoma Health Department. And so we're building a database and doing things for them. Yeah,
probably
and
DB2 back then.
some of the other stuff. DBase?
Base. So that was okay.
Yeah, this is
so
way
it
back.
Was not mainframe.
Yeah,
This is.
So I really had a, you know, affinity for that. And that's why I did the consulting route, because it was all computer programming, information systems, you know, for businesses.
I can imagine you probably don't do a whole lot of programming in your day to day. Transitioning into leadership, and do you like it? Do you like the path that you kind of have gone?
Well, you know, most days you have to live vicariously through your team, but you definitely have to keep up to speed on the technology. So
then, how
there's a lot of reading.
Okay.
that goes on. Now, you know, one of my goals this year is to, you know, get OCI certifications, and, you know, it's more of available time, you know, from that standpoint. But, you know, in technology, no matter what level you're at, I mean, you've got to keep up to speed.
Yeah.
You know, if that's writing a little bit of code every once in a while, then, you know, try to figure out how to do that. It doesn't happen very often, but.
Yeah. One of the things we've been trying to do with this series of podcasts, and we're talking to all leaders, obviously,
yeah.
CIOs and CTOs and so forth, is path to leadership. You know, and it's interesting to hear everybody's different, right? Some people accidentally fell into it. Some people had a clear, defined path.
Right.
And goal that they set early on.
Some didn't want to do it, just kind of got into it anyway.
It was thrust upon
you know,
them, right?
I have an interesting background there. The founder of Cerner I met in college, and he recruited me to come to Kansas City and mentor me in my 20s and 30s, and basically said, well, you have an offer with Anders Consulting. That's where I started. Why don't you go there for 5 years and come back and talk to me?
Okay.
It took me 10 years to come back and talk to him, but, you know, I worked in England on a public utility geographic information system project.
That'd be interesting.
Then I worked, came back and was assigned to the Exxon Valdez case.
Oh, wow.
Using the geographic systems to map the oiling in Canada, because there's a lot of lawsuits going on.
Mm-hmm.
I went to work for Mary Kay Cosmetics, which is kind of a hoot. From there, in their manufacturing space. So we're putting a manufacturing system.
Man, you really hopped around.
Yeah. Well, this is all the same company.
Oh.
With Anderson.
Oh, right? Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Well, that makes sense.
And then I went to work for, at the time it was GTE, it's now Verizon. So in the telecom space.
Yeah.
And so had a lot of this kind of IT experience in dog years, you know, that happened.
Right.
And then I was there 4.5, 5 years. And then there's an opportunity at, you know, a bank for credit card processing. And I jumped right into associate vice president role right out of, you know, just being a consultant manager and kind of stayed there. Now I've done all kinds of different things. And, you know, right now I have, you know, a large group, and I may go back to my other group and go from, you know, 120 resources to zero.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Because I want to get deeper, you know, in one space, and then, you know, other opportunities come, you just kind of,
so it was never your goal to build an empire and manage 500
people.
I
do not like big orgs.
Yeah. Right? Oh, really?
I don't.
You've been part of them.
I know, but, you know, the fun part is, you know, building high-performing teams.
Sure.
And, you know.
Do you think a big organization sort of stifles high-performing teams?
No.
Okay.
Definitely not at Oracle.
Okay.
Right? And they're teaching Cerner a lot. Hmm. About how to do that in the engineering. And I think it's a better strategy.
Well, like you said, they're basically a tech, you know, an engineering first company. So
they are, you know, crazy.
Imagine maybe the experts.
You know, crazy things.
That.
I had an open position on one of my teams. I had 600 applicants, like within 2 weeks.
It's Oracle.
Yeah. But I mean, internal, external, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, building those high performing teams, the contrast in culture. Cerner hired everyone out of college, right? We had a Dev Academy. It was like you go to a draft, right? You provide developers to the Dev Academy to figure out who's the good ones.
Yeah.
And then you just go to a draft and you pick up, okay, I've got five. I'm just coming to my team. That's what you do.
Right.
Oracle's more, you want senior. You want your workhorses, you know, in the 10 to 15 year range.
Absolutely. So you're going and hiring other companies' best people.
Well, you're doing that, but you're growing quickly. You're managing, and that's what I've done in the past. I've had smaller companies. We couldn't afford it.
Sure.
Right? We couldn't afford to make a hiring mistake, right?
Mm.
So we would have senior folks, you know, come in, and one of the most important aspects, you know, in that, I've got a piece in this article is talking about finding engineers that care, right? You know, I don't know how many engineers that, you know, I've interviewed that, I mean, they are phenomenal engineers, right? But they're, you know, a little bit of a loose cannon at times, right? Versus those that I know that if they're at a soccer game and it's on a Saturday and the system's down, they have their laptop, they have their wireless card to get in. I don't have to say anything.
Right.
They just do that sort of stuff, right?
Right.
Now, is that sort of requirements that you place upon them when you hire them, or is that something
it's something you kind of like intuitively know and you build it.
I didn't know if there were characteristics in their personality look for as well.
So I'll give you for instance. So the gift card company that I worked for, I joined it, came from Cerner. I had 300 some odd people, Matrix N, joined this company. There's only 10. You know, five developers, right? They were great. They'd worked together before. You don't have to do designs. They just think alike. You know, they just do it. But we didn't have a lot of money, and we were trying to build this stuff up. And so we figured out from the best way for us to hire, right? We're using recruiting agencies and Indeed and everything else. And so we would write, you know, you have your formal, you know, HR job description, right? Well, we would write a job posting. And what we do is say, we need the Samuel Jackson of coding, right? we started it, right? And then we kind of weave in our requirements and what you have to do. But then, you know, most engineers are introverts. Mm-hmm. You get them in an interview, they just can't think, they can't do things, right? So we said, hey, send us a copy of your best code you've ever written. Tell us about it, you know? And then if they made the, you know, the short list and we'd interview them, they bring that in and they tell us about that. Right. Cause it's something they know.
They're comfortable.
And they're comfortable.
Sure.
And we reviewed it ahead of time, all that stuff. Well, what it told us, so one of the, tenets of this article, I talk about perfection, right? And so in healthcare, if you do something wrong, you kill somebody.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that's a big problem. Like right now, I think there's a lot of companies that, you know, errors can lead to.
Right, right. And in the payments industry, you know, debits have to equal credits. And it's somebody's money, right, that you're dealing with, right? Mm-hmm. Got to have perfection. So we would look at their responses and we tell them, write something to tell us about it. And we could look at their code and look at their writing and parlay it back to what we asked them to do. So we knew they could follow instructions. We knew if their punctuation was right, if their detail in their writing was correct. We could see how clean their code was, how they understood it. And that was vital to what we did because you can't teach them, right? We had situations where we had a gift card company. We used a MasterCard private label card, right? So it's really a MasterCard. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of shopping malls in Canada because everything in Canada is an enclosed shopping mall for obvious reasons, right?
Yeah.
Well, in the lower populated areas of Canada, the MasterCard network runs across the Visa network. It's just the way the systems work. Well, when you do that, it triggers a rate change from Canadian dollars to U.S. dollars. And so we didn't have that rate change right.
Oh, boy.
So we had people calling us saying, oh, I'm using my card. It's got a dollar less than what I thought I had on it, or 99 cents or whatever else, right? Yeah. And so, you know, we figured that out, but that was the importance of what we're trying to do. In the States, if you do that incorrectly, you get attorney generals calling you.
Yeah, sure.
So perfection was good. So we didn't have a lot of money. We couldn't have a hiring mistake. So, you know, the lead developer at the time came up with a strategy, right? And it worked. It worked for us.
That's actually smart.
Yeah. So,
because that's one of the hardest things. And I agree with you. I think, you know, there's been some really talented developers that I've run into in my career that I wouldn't necessarily want working for me.
Right.
Just because the attitude or, you know,
yeah,
somebody that really cares and somebody that really dedicates themselves to it.
Well, you can tell somebody who wants to join, you know, for the money or something like that. And then they're, you know, a flight risk. You know, if they get something better
or
whatever it might be. So those are a little hard because you get them embedded, take all this time. You've clearly told us how much time it takes to get developers comfortable within systems in your whole culture. To have them just up and leave is definitely catastrophic.
Yeah. So. And you know, for that company, you know, the lead developer, you know, the two guys that ran it, you know, it was kind of their ideas. You know, I supported it. We did goofy things. We did 6 a.m. tailgates.
Oh.
And so, you know, they come in, bring a flat top. We do burgers and, you know, all the seniors, you know, the C-levels would come and, you know, meet with the team. And we were a small company. It was probably 70 of us. But it was a cultural thing that we did that just brought everybody together. Because you'd basically be done by 8, clean up, and go to work. Right?
I wonder if that day's development was down.
That wasn't a deployment day.
That's where that whole Canadian U.S. dollar thing happened after a tailgate. That's hilarious. Have you kind of covered everything you want to cover?
I think so. The last thing in here, which is important to large companies or small companies, is really a change management aspect. So, you know, when you're proposing new systems, you know, getting stakeholder buy-in across the board is critical. And one of the things that, you know, we did, because I went after a $10 million investment, you know, for the team. And what we would do is I called a layered communication strategy. So in the same week, we kind of orchestrate this where, you know, VP to VP would have a conversation, and then manager to manager, then engineer to our DevOps team, and then product to product. And we'd be selling the same story. So when the topics came up, everybody at every level may not have a deep understanding, but they heard it before. And they kind of got the pitch and got everything.
The narrative that
we were trying to do, which really helped us, you know, speed up doing, you know, getting done what we needed to do. But, you know, it helped with all the layers of management to, you know, get critical things done that was important for the business and the teams.
Yeah. Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
So how do you know? Okay. So the budget, you said you went after about, you know, 10 million or so for the team. Is that sort of a team effort when you go to plan that sort of thing? Do you get buy-in from, you know, I guess, how does that process work?
Well, it goes from the business case standpoint. So,
and those are trickled down from, you know, from the top anyway, right?
Well, I build them.
Oh, okay.
Right. I mean, it goes back to, you know, how do you support your team and what you're doing? It's not just all about the tech. It's the business.
Right.
And our business needed to grow. This area was an area of high growth. We experienced, you know, 20% growth year over year, both in transaction volume and revenue. But we had a bunch of 25-year-old systems, and you're in a company with thousands of engineers and you still got one guy that knows the system over there.
One person.
The one person, right?
He's been there for 25 years.
Right. So when you come in and say, well, here's a story, right? I've got, you know, 4 different transaction sets. I got 3 systems each that does the same transaction. We have maintenance, you have license costs, you have all that. And so you start doing that. And then you parlay that to, well, you know, the system over here is doing $50 million of business. It's been sunset 2 years ago from the company. We can't even apply a Java security patch to, you know.
Right.
And so you tell that story. And it just made sense for us to say, yeah, we are in the product building software, you know, building, but these systems we have are really commodity in the market. And there's someone out there who has the gold standard. So it's basically, if we get this system, we can cut our development time in half because it's more of a WYSIWYG kind of orchestration type system where you kind of, here's the transaction flow. If you need to code in it, you look at the flow and add your, you know, code in the piece, and then it code generates what runs in production.
Mm-hmm.
So it cuts our time in half from that standpoint.
And so that's your return on investment.
Yes. Yeah. And so we kind of, you know, went with that strategy and I parlayed. It's like, I'm not going to need to hire anybody to do this. You know, we're just going to use the resources we have and move it through. And basically once we invest in, you know, the first year, we're going to have, you know, something implemented. Well, we had it done in 7 months.
Oh, nice.
Right. And so, you know, you've got a dying system over here that, you know, you as a leader are like, oh my gosh, you know, is it going to stay up today? You know, type of thing.
Right.
To like, okay, we have
stability.
Stability. Yeah. We have, you know, something that is tried and true in the industry that we know will scale. And
they're saving money and making,
Yes.
That's fantastic. Yeah, so your job is partially a salesman as well. You got to sell to your leadership.
Yes. Yeah.
And an accountant. You got to calculate the return on it.
That's right. That's right. So
everything else. But.
So anyway, I think that's good.
Yeah.
It's been a good time.
Yeah.
No, this was great.